America, it's our podcast. We can do what we want. By God. Just saying. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rosdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is our thing.
And I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us this Monday. We're going to do the news and then share a couple of Make Me Smiles. So let's start with the news fix. You only have one and I have two, so why don't you go first?
All right. I've got two. I think I snuck one in when you
were
looking.
Oh, yeah, you do have two. Never mind.
Okay. One is substantive and one is just, this is pretty amusing, isn't it? And I'll do the amusing one first. So Christine Lagarde, used to be the head of the IMF, now the head of the European Central Bank, was asked in an interview with a Dutch television show this weekend about cryptocurrency. And she said, almost literally, cryptocurrency is worth nothing. It's worthless. It has nothing to back it up, and stay far away from it. The stay far away from it thing is my addition to what she actually said. But then she said, I do follow it very closely, though, because my son invests in it. He's a grown man. He can do what he wants, but he invested against my advice. And I thought that was just priceless. I thought that was absolutely priceless. And I kind of loved it.
It really captures the dynamic of where we are with
moms,
that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Man, there's a lot packed in there.
So that's, So that's my sort of fun-ish one. Here's a substantive one, and I'm sure y'all have heard the news already today about President Biden saying the quiet part out loud about Taiwan when he was in a press conference in Tokyo today. And what the president said was, heck yes, we're going to defend Taiwan if China attacks. And much has been made of this because of the very, very strict policy of strategic ambiguity that the United States has maintained since 1979, when we established relations with Beijing and broke off relations with the Republic of China on Taiwan, and then passed the Taiwan Relations Act in 1979. And look, it's a delicate dance, right? Because we do officially recognize the One China policy, but we also want Taiwan to feel a part of the community of nations, and we have relations with them and all of those things. But Biden said today, heck yes, we're going to defend them if they are attacked like Ukraine. And I need to inject a note of reality here, okay? There is actually a law on the books in the United States, okay? It's public law 96-8, excuse me, passed in 1979 on the 10th of April. And it says in relevant part two things. Number one, the United States will make available to Taiwan such defense articles and defense services in such quantity as may be necessary to enable Taiwan to maintain sufficient self-defense capabilities. That's number one. And that's what Biden said today. Yes, we're going to help them out. The other thing that Biden said today was it would wreck stability in the entire region. And the Taiwan Relations Act, which is the law of the United States, says that, scrolling down here, it would be a grave threat if Taiwan were to be threatened by non-peaceful means. So he's just saying what the law is. And it's a big deal, yes, but it's not a gaffe. It's not Biden being an 80-year-old man or 79-year-old man and not knowing what he's talking about. It's literally the law of the United States. And I really need people to know that. That's it.
I mean, but the reason that this stuff makes such a big splash when it comes up is because everyone is so terrified of the U.S. actually locking horns with China. And if it happens, it's probably going to happen over Taiwan. And or at least that's, you know, what smarter people than me on this seem to think. And, you know, Biden talking about it just sort of reminds people of that, I think, who might not want to think about it otherwise.
Totally fair. But anyway, that's the context in the news. What do you got?
Well, that kind of feeds nicely into mine, which is all about, I have two also. The first one is about military spending, which, you know, I think I brought up to you, and I also, when I was filling in for you one time on the PM show, I brought this up, that when we passed the, the Defense Authorization Act or appropriations, $773 billion, right, for the year or something like that. We spent a lot of money on the military, and we just, on a bipartisan basis, Congress approved the additional you know, $40 billion for Ukraine. Needed money, agreed to by, you know, all the parties that be, got to keep Russia in check, and there's a big risk for global stability. Fine. So there's an interesting piece on a Substack, I guess. What do we call those? Substacks? Just by themselves?
Article? Yeah, I think so.
Essay? Substacks.
Anyway, I would say a Substack. Yeah.
A Substack? Okay. Chris Hedges, who used to be a foreign correspondent for the New York Times, now has a Substack. And he has a piece out yesterday that is titled No Way Out But War. And he talks about the sort of permanent state of war that we are in and all the money that we spend on the military and what we do not spend money on. And as he puts it, no infrastructure programs to repair decaying roads and bridges, which require $41.8 billion to fix, no program to feed the 17 million children who go to bed each night hungry, no rational gun control or curbing of violence and mass shooting, no help for the 100,000 Americans who die each year of drug overdoses, no minimum wage of $15 an hour. We spend more on the military than the next nine countries combined. He also cites that, and I went back and looked, that where the, you know, Biden budget for the coming year, you know, is upwards of 700, creeping up on $800 billion, the proposed budget for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is $10.675 billion. The proposed budget for the EPA is $11.881 billion. And, you know, it goes into all the people who make this happen, but it just, I've been struck ever since this last round of Ukraine funding was passed, just how ready we are as a country to spend money on this kind of stuff. And without question, this is important, but how hesitant we are to spend money on, you know, our own population. And, you know, budgets are priorities. And what Congress spends money on is a priority. And just quickly before I toss it off to you, the New York Times has a really good infographic looking at four ways to understand what the money that we're spending on Ukraine. And a lot of it is not actually military. It's economic support. It's food assistance, migration and refugee assistance, other kinds of foreign aid. But it's a lot of weapons and military and intelligence and things like that, which the Ukrainians desperately need. And finally, if you think you could spend the military budget better, just last week, the Congressional Budget Office put out this really interesting tool that shows where the military budget is going and actually allows you to, on a sort of interactive basis, navigate how you might spend that money differently and what it would do to troop levels, what it would do to, like, spending in different categories, what it would mean in terms of, like, actual planes and aircraft carriers and cruisers and combat ships. And, you know, would you get rid of an attack submarine or an amphibious ship or things like that? It's a fascinating tool, but, you know, totals up to hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars that we spend there. And then, of course, there's the other hundreds of billion dollars we spend servicing the debt because of what we spend on the military. So just numbers I'm paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Those are, and those games are fun, but it's all really hard. It's all really hard.
Yeah. And then the other story that I've, of course, ongoing paying attention to is the, you know, abortion debate in this country. And the Texas Tribune has a story out today about all of these GOP legislators in Texas that are warning companies that if they pay for abortions or help, you know, women travel to get abortion, that they will try to ban those companies from operating in Texas. Now, is that likely to happen? Doubtful, but I guess people said that about other legislation that has passed in Texas. but they're pledging to introduce bills that would bar corporations from doing business in Texas if they pay for abortions in states where the procedure is legal. It would explicitly prevent firms from offering employees access to abortion-related care through health insurance benefits, and would expose executives to criminal prosecution under pre-Roe anti-abortion laws the legislature never repealed. Now, what companies are we talking about? We're talking about lots of different companies. You've got anywhere from, you know, I'm looking at a gaming studio in Texas that was trying to, that says that they're committing to do that. You have places like Lyft, and then there's a Bloomberg story about how Walmart and Lowe's shareholders are trying to push those companies to vote on things related to abortion in their upcoming shareholder meetings. And I don't think companies are going to be able to sit quietly on this one. They're going to be forced to make a call on an issue a lot of them, I'm sure, would really rather stay out of.
I think they would definitely rather stay out of it, for sure. And they're going to have to decide. And, you know, with all that political power that the Supreme Court is giving corporations, comes a little bit of responsibility, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
There's so much fascinating reporting that's happening on this issue all over the country, and it's really revealing so much. And, you know, on the tech show, we're digging into this idea of, like, viability, which is wrapped up in so much of the abortion debate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of two stories that we're doing on that. We got another one coming tomorrow, because it's like you've got science that has changed what those words mean from the time that Roe versus Wade became law. And somehow all these scientists and doctors are getting pulled into this debate, and they don't want to be there either.
Yeah. 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 No, the bit this morning was really interesting. Really interesting.
Mm. Thanks. It was a fascinating conversation.
Yep.
Okay. Smiles. Yours made me laugh.
So I was up running this morning up in the hills. I was up running this morning up in the hills, as I usually do. Super foggy this morning. I was the only person there. And when that happens, I start looking out for mountain lions and coyotes. Because it just, I don't know, it's spooky up there when it's just you and fog and there ain't nobody else. So I had that on my mind as I was scrolling through my Twitter feed today, and I saw this from the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation on Twitter, and here's the quote. "Listen, bear spray," it tweeted, "does not work like bug spray. We would like to not have to say that again." So think about that. You spray bear spray at a bear. You do not put bear spray on you.
Like, I wonder how many people had unfortunate accidents related to this before they actually got to the point of having to tweet it. And was it because, like, someone had a really bad skin reaction to bear spray and needed rescue? Or was it that someone ended up in an unfortunate incident with a bear because they thought their bear spray on them was going to protect them and it didn't? Like, there are a lot of different ways that could have gone down. Okay.
Yeah. But it gave me a
me too. So mine made me smile, but probably not in the kindest of ways. As you and I have talked about, there are all of these defendants who are in the process of being charged and being prosecuted for their actions on January 6th and being involved in the attack on the Capitol. And, you know, a lot of these people who decided to come to Washington, D.C. for this purpose, you know, come from all walks of life, all income levels, many different backgrounds. And while they're awaiting prosecutions, many of them are out on bond and, you know, just going about their lives to some extent while they await prosecution. So one of them, basically won a competition at the company where he works really great sales.
Yeah,
and won a trip to, where was it? To like Cabo or something. Hold on, let me get it exactly. Well, Cabo, St. Lucas in Mexico. And so this Jason Douglas Owens applied to the court for an emergency motion to travel for this trip. And the judge just wrote this withering, withering denial this. And Zoe Tillman at BuzzFeed is the one who tweeted this out, and she extracted the best part of it, which says, "While the court does not begrudge defendant's apparent business success while on pretrial release, his international travel to harvest the bounties of such success will need to wait until he is no longer facing felony charges arising from ill-advised domestic travel."
That's amazing. It's a paragraph. It's great. It's great.
That made me smile.
Yeah. Yeah. Super great. Yes. Super great.
Okay. There's no good way to transition to this, but it is the final week of our May fundraiser. And, you know, to continue bringing you Make Me Smiles of political and non-political versions, we kind of need this to be a big fundraiser. So we are almost halfway to our goal of $200,000, and we would really appreciate your gift to help get us there. This week, it's marketplace.org/givesmart. Don't forget, we have all the cool swag.
Mm-hmm. So the swag is the Capier glasses, of course, the Jasper tumbler. There's a summer playlist bonus gift. If you could hook us up, we would appreciate it. We need your help. We cannot literally do this without you. Marketplace.org/givesmart if you can help us out.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it for us today. Kai and I will be back tomorrow for a deep dive about the FEC versus Ted Cruz, which is that court case that we've been talking about, where the Supreme Court sided with Republican Senator Ted Cruz and struck down a law that involves the use of campaign funds. We'll talk about what this means for the midterms and the future of campaign finance.
Always a tricky topic, campaign finance. Always, always, always. Tell us what you thought about today's show, or send us the questions you have about campaign finance and the FEC versus Ted Cruz, if you've got questions about that, or regular Wednesday questions. You can do that as well. Send us a voice memo or an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call and leave a voice message. Bridget went over that Friday, what the difference is. I still don't get it. But anyway, 508-UB-SMART is our phone number. You can just call us. Call us, please. Please.
By the way, I heard you telling Amy to drink all of my drinks.
What? Well, I mean, they were sitting there in the office fridge.
I'm just saying. They were, and she's welcome to all.
Yes. I figured. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's program is engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam. All right, let's see if I can actually get my flight this time.
Good luck. Bon voyage.